Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I'd like to welcome all of you back to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder, and we are talking about the Billy Meier case this evening. I wanted to read a little bit from Contact 45, where Billy and Semyase are speaking about some of the horrible weather that's going to occur here on Earth. In the chat room, we were talking a little bit about some of the floods that have been going on. Anyway, Semyase says, "I am also aware of that. For Earthman, only the use of force remains. For just too long, he has allowed himself to be fooled by the responsible ones. Therefore, in a peaceful manner, the power on the Earth is embodied by politics, the religions, and the scientists. And exactly this power must be broken. Otherwise, Earthman suffers a very evil end, not only through war and exploitation, but also by the atomizing of the planet. Due to the new bomb of insanity, however, great cosmic consequences have been banished so that other star systems and galaxies would not be drawn in and would share the suffering. However, the Earth would have been annihilated in a firestorm. But Earthman still has some time to come to his senses and to terraform the great ones, as you call them, the sword of power, and live according to the natural rules of life. Yet he will not be able to avoid having already to bear the consequences of his insanity, because the Earth is already damaged within and without to the degree that from within she is heaving. Powerful earthquakes, volcanic eruptions, climactic changes, storms, floodings, and accidents will mark the world picture from now on. Entire nations will sink into waters, and uncountable human beings will meet an evil end." And there's also here a section from Contact 215 that I thought was also applicable. "And through this, a shifting of weight inside the Earth takes place, caused, for example, by the creation of gigantic lakes by damming and by creating hollow caverns due to the exploitation of petroleum and gas, and thereby causing unnatural inner Earth movements, which also lead to unnatural tectonic effects and cause earthquakes and volcanic eruptions, which also in turn cause enormous climactic changes, horrendous tornadoes, devastating proportions, which in their end will set their destructive energies free on the entire world. And all of this will lead to horrible floods, unusually massive snowfalls, which will advance to the southern countries and finally even to the equatorial regions. Because through the insanity of human beings, the Earth has begun to noticeably spin as a consequence of atomic explosions." Anyway, it goes on and on here. This we're in a real pickle here on the Earth. We've damaged the Earth internally. We've damaged the Earth in many, many ways. And we are reaping the whirlwind because of that, quite literally. I wanted to talk a little bit about ERA, since, you know, ERA is more of an ideal situation and a kind of a goal for us to shoot for. Let's talk a little bit about health. The people on ERA live around 1,000 years. They have puberty around 12 to 16 years. The time of marriage is about 70 Earth years. That's the age of maturity. They say a person's mature at 70 years old. We're about preparing to die at that age. All STDs have been eradicated from ERA. There is no money. All of the manufacturing is robot-assisted. People can borrow assets if they need them. Food, energy, and housing is free. There is no poverty. There are no skyscrapers. There are intensive park and garden facilities. They don't have streets or roads. They don't use surface vehicles except a few hobbyists. Most people live in the countryside in, you know, rural areas. There are no smokestacks that pollute the air. Gardens are used. They have both monogamy and polygamy. It's a tremendous place. And hopefully, as we continue to study the Meyer material and pass this material on, and in the next 800 years, as the information catches on more and more, the Earth hopefully can make a recovery and our societies can be more like the societies on ERA. Remember, they haven't had war for 50,000 years. They are at the fifth stage of human evolution, and that's the stage, the last fully physical stage for human beings. At that stage, people become kings of wisdom, ish wishes, and they have tremendous abilities, spiritual abilities, tremendous abilities associated to their material consciousness. You know, the Earth has had some very strange things occur in our history. And I often say, if we knew our real history, then we would understand the way the universe is. And that's one of the big problems here on the Earth, is we don't understand the nature of the universe. One interesting thing that I brought up last night on the Revolution radio show was this star Beta Centauri, which Beta Centauri was the home of Eris the Barbarian, and other people who came to the Earth some 133,000 years ago. And it's interesting that there are two terms for Beta Centauri in the Arabic. One is Hadar, which means to be present on the ground, settled, civilized area. Now, why would an ancient people look at a star and call it on the ground, settled or civilized? Well, the Meyer material tells us that people came from that star in our ancient past and settled here on Earth. Some of them were civilized, some of them maybe not so much. Now, the other term, speaking of the extraterrestrials that weren't so civilized, the other term for Beta Centauri in the Arabic is Agena, which is derived from a Latin term, Gina, which means knees. Now, what does that have to do with extraterrestrials? Well, if there were some that weren't so friendly, that weren't so congenial, maybe some of the Earth peoples were on their knees to these extraterrestrials, which I think is probably very, very true. So interesting, and we can look back to our ancient languages and get insight into what has, in fact, happened in our ancient history. I've talked about Atlantis and Lemuria so many times, and there's much, much more I'm sure that we could learn from that. And I'd like to do more research and try to understand the big picture a little bit more and get a clearer picture of what has happened. You know, I've talked about the Giza intelligences and how they affected the Earth and how they even affected modern history, with their influence on Hitler, with their influence on our religions. And I've talked about the lineage, the Giza intelligence's lineage, which we've seen on the Earth since ancient times, since about what 11,500 years ago, when the pole shift occurred. Now, these extraterrestrials are not just called the Giza intelligences. Sometimes they are called the Bifath. And one of the things that Ptah has told us is that we are still under the influences of their technologies, even though they've left and most of them have been killed. There's something called telenotic impulses, which will continue to linger for 200 or 300 years, according to Ptah. So we're still, in some ways, under the influences of these extraterrestrials. And for thousands of years, Earth humanity was influenced by religious miracles and visions of every kind. The Bifath created religious delusions. They presented themselves as angels and gods, and they required Earth humanity to subjugate themselves to them. And in fact, they were also, these Giza intelligences, involved in barbaric violence. They built a mighty station, as I've discussed before, under the pyramids of Giza. And Billy was able to go underground at that time and see firsthand, through Askit's help, what these extraterrestrials had done and were doing. I'd like to also tell you a little bit about Camigal, who was one of the extraterrestrials who survived into modern times. Let me read something here that you might find interesting. Like no ruler before, Camigal the First forced all terrestrial religions into the frame of blood-demanding cults, which unfortunately were able to maintain on the earth up to the current time. The Giza intelligences transposed via teleportation apparent realities with visionary experiences into people like Dan Fry and Reinhold Schmidt, who considered these as a reality. And according to Meyer information anyway, of course I can't prove any of this, but according to Meyer information, the Giza intelligences played a major role in the creation of the New Testament. I know that would not be sitting well with a lot of people. Daniel Fry, if you haven't heard of him before, he was an American contactee who claimed that he had multiple contacts with extraterrestrials, and he said that he took a ride on a remotely piloted spacecraft on July 4th, 1949. The Meyer material said he had interactions with these Bifath, with these Giza intelligences. Daniel Fry has written some books relating to his experiences. He's one of the lesser-known contactees, among others like George Adamski, Howard Menger, Buck Nelson, George Van Tassel. Daniel Fry was born in 1908 in Mississippi. He was an orphan, and he wrote books about his contacts. Again, the Meyer information says he was actually in touch with these extraterrestrial humans who were headquartered underneath the Giza Plateau. There was something that occurred that Daniel Fry talks about. He wrote about something called the White Sands Incident, which was published in 1954. And it talks about his interaction with these extraterrestrials. And that would be a good book to get some time and to kind of to go over it in a little more depth and try to figure out what that was all about. In any case, The Giza intelligences, the Bafoth, have had a very profound effect on the people of the Earth. And I've talked about many times about Ascot and Billy taking the trip far below the Giza Plateau and seeing their ships and also seeing the religious artifacts, which I think it all had a profound impact on Billy. You know, Billy was only about 16 years old at the time. So you can imagine some of the trauma just associated with having all of this information, and then and eventually learning and knowing that you're going to have to do something with this information. And can you imagine the responsibility of having a spirit form that's 9.6 billion years old? The Nokedamian spirit form is said to be 9.6 billion years old. And it's allegedly this spirit form is the universal prophet, which is supposed to come down from a spiritual plane called Arahat Athrasada. Down in into our material world, where it's, you know, one of the incarnations of the spirit form that we refer to as Nokedamian was the person of Nokedamian, who incarnated on a planet named Sadar, which is some 3 billion light years from the Earth. That's another thing that, to try to wrap your mind around. The tremendous distances and the tremendous... imagine all the people that must be in our universe. In any case, Nokedamian is the what we call his spirit form. Let me read something that Ascot talks about in terms of the collective subconscious. And let me read something about Nokedamian here in terms of the collective subconscious. The knowledge taught by the herald will be integrated by the human and verbally carried forward, like it is also through the collective subconscious forms and through the other swinging waves. It continues to be continuously disseminated throughout the entire universe. So this information from the teaching of the spirit continues to be disseminated through the entire universe. And it also, it continually influences our collective subconscious. So this is one of the reasons that the Meyer material has such a profound effect, because it is somehow being transferred by these swinging waves. Remember, there's a swinging wave. It's an electromagnetic kind of energy that goes from the gamut. The gamut controls the thoughts and feelings of the spiritual consciousness, and it sends the swinging wave from the gamut to the psyche. Let me read something that Ascot said about our collective subconscious. In reality, this is only the truth to the extent that the Earth humans are connected with other life forms through Earth humanity's collective subconsciousness. We do have a collective subconsciousness. And it's one of the things that gives me a little hope, because I see some signs that I haven't really talked about too much, but some signs in the IT industry. Certain movements seem to indicate, like, I'll give you one for example, the movement to open source. Open source is kind of free software. And many software engineers devote their time to these open source projects, and they don't get paid for it. And the software industry is shooting forward at such an incredible speed in terms of progress, and it's because people are learning cooperation. And I think this is one of the big things we need to learn from the Meyer material, is the whole idea of cooperation. Because remember, everything in the universe is one. There's an incredible oneness to the universe. Let me talk about another one of these incarnations of this very ancient spirit form. You notice I'm not saying Billy, because Billy is only one incarnation of this very ancient spirit form. And this is Quetzal talking about the line of Henoch, which is discussed in Contact 228. And I'll switch over to that in a second. Here, I think it says, here, Semyase and I, as well as Ptah and his father Sphath, as well as my father, have always belonged paternally to a line of descendants that leads back to Henoch and Nokodamian, as well as their sons. So Sphath, Ptah, Semyase, Quetzal, they're in the same paternal line. They're related genetically to Nokodamian, and that's one of the reasons why they are still having contact with Edward Albert Meyer. Anyway, let me continue. These sons are the ones who were under an obligation to the mission to instruct all who come from the Nokodamian and Henoch lineage and hereditary series in the teaching of the spirit, and to preserve the entire knowledge regarding this. So Sphath, Semyase, Ptah, Quetzal are all related to this Nokodemian lineage. So, and that's why they still maintain this contact with Billy. I think the player and themselves would have cut off contact by now because of the failure that we've had here on the earth. Now, let me also talk about the line of Henoch as it's mentioned in Sphath's explanation. It says here, for the spiritual teaching, which has been the teaching of Nokodamian, Henoch, and all your former personality since time immemorial, you should, as it was in all past time, only require as a reciprocal gift a will to learn, love, peace, freedom, harmony, joy, diligence, equitableness, and humaneness, as well as the quality of being human. Not, however, any material things through which you could achieve wealth. So, in other words, Sphath told Billy, you know, don't get wealthy based on the teaching of the spirit. That's not what it's about either. Another descendant, an incarnation, and I think the spirit form is the same spirit form that now enlivens Quetzal, there was a man named Semyase, who is mentioned in Contact Report 9, and I believe he was on the earth at about 13,000 years ago. And that same spirit form may have also been on the earth about 389,000 years ago. Anyway, Semyase was here during the time of Atlantis and Lemuria, and he was the highest leader of these sub-leaders below Eris the Barbarian. Well, he mated with an Eva, a female human being who was still mostly human-like and also rather beautiful. So, and the offspring of that mating was Adam, the earth human being, as they called him. And it's really interesting because this interaction between the Pleiaren and the earth humans at that time produced some really bizarre genetic effects, like tremendous giants were on the earth at that time as well, which I also consider a very fascinating thing. I wanted to switch to Contact Report 228 real quick. I think that may have a little bit of information there that we'll find interesting. One of the things I thought I would talk about was the supposed Anunnaki. The Anunnaki are discussed from time to time. And this is Quetzal. talking about the quote-unquote Anunnaki. Quetzal says, these stories are known to me because I have studied diverse ancient terrestrial texts, also including cuneiform tablets, among others. This is why I know the humans in Akkadia, Babylon, and in Sumer already knew the planets of the solar system and so forth. This is very interesting that our ancient peoples knew about the planets in the solar system. However, that which emerges from the old texts regarding the Anunnaki and the planet Nibiru is based on mythological facts as well as beliefs, misguidance, and erroneous assumptions. So, let me continue here, but basically Quetzal is saying that the Anunnaki are the imagination of Earth human beings. So, I know that will cause a big uproar in the UFO community, but let me continue here. The Anunnaki beings were a pure imagination of the Earth humans, who, full of fantasy and according to their beliefs, fabricated the Anunnaki people from the planet Nibiru as the giant shape in the sky appeared, which truly did not deal with an actual planet. Rather, it concerned an uncommonly large comet, a big comet that did have a orbital period around our solar system of about 3,600 years. So that's where the whole story of Nibiru came from. And people are still talking about this today, Planet X, all over. It really is just the destroyer comet. And that's all it is. In Contact 228, Quetzal also talks about planets outside the orbit of Pluto. Now, there's a planet outside the orbit of Pluto called Cassian. And I'll see if I can find a little more information on that for us, if possible. Well, let me continue here. It's an Earth-side planet with a very great speed at a great distance, and it orbits around our sun, and it will drift away more and more, and eventually disappearing into space. So there, and now our scientists are finding these planets that the Meyer material has already talked about many times before. In any case, I talked about Arahat Athrasata and the fact that Billy's spirit form, the spirit form that enlivened Nokodemi and the spirit form that's 9.6 billion years old, came down from the Arahat Athrasata level. So let me read a little bit what Billy has to say about that. Yes, that's right, because evolution is an infinitely variable development of learning and cognition, as well as the acquisition of true love, knowledge, and wisdom. And this process is granted to all coarse matter life forms, as well as to all the domains of the spirit forms and their pure spirit energy levels. Consequently, there are, in every we form, and let me stop there for a minute, the humanity, in terms of its collective subconscious, could be considered a we form. But let me continue here. Either material or spiritual, lower or lowest, respectively higher or highest evolutionary stages. And Billy got a question here about this. Because also the spirit forms of the Arahat Athrasata level have to evolve further, as also does every spirit form in the subsequent level, there must also exist for them a source of knowledge, perhaps in the form of an especially highly developed spirit form in the Arahat Athrasata level. Billy says no to this, that in the Arahat Athrasata level, also in the other higher levels, impulses in this regard come from the next higher level, also out of its own level storage banks. So I think in the spiritual plane, which is eventually where all spirit forms end up, you know, as we go through the six stages below the spirit's plane, Eventually, our spirit form will enter back into the spiritual plane, starting with Arahat Athrasada. And evidently, there are impulses that come down from the six levels that are higher than Arahat Athrasada. Let me continue here. So after the development of material life forms, in this case, therefore, the humans, they unconsciously take up their stored information out of the higher levels via the repository banks. They process it, and they achieve development. Subsequently, they evolve. So once our spirit forms get to the spiritual plane, there are seven levels in that spiritual plane, and that we get impulses from the higher level. So if we're in level one, Arahat Athrasada, we'll get impulses from level two. And I think the last spiritual plane is called Patali level. And then after that, I guess we merge back with creations. Again, this is kind of a question-answer thing that's going on here. Let me read the question. Question, when I consider Nokadamian spirit form, before it was reincarnated yet again out of the Arahat Athrasada level, and returned to the material universe in a human form, then according to my deliberations, it must have taken a very high evolutionary stage within Arahat Athrasada level. So Billy says, yes, that is correct. Nokadamian's pure spirit form. Now this is interesting. Here is Billy talking about Nokadamian's pure spirit form, which is his own spirit form. Let me continue here. Was already very highly developed in the Arahat Athrasada level. As the resolution to return in a material human body was made, whereby the implementation certainly could be enabled through the authoritative engagement of the highest level, the Patali level. This is because for Nokadamian spirit form, a special consistency alteration had to be created, only through which the spirit form could be capable of returning into a human body. So the spirit form of Edward Albert Meyer, that the extraterrestrials refer to as Nokadamian, something allegedly had to be done to that spirit form so it could leave the spiritual plane and then incarnate into the material universe again, and incarnate into human beings again. And Billy says, the knowledge development level relates, however, only to the concerns of the spirit, creation, the absolute informs the spiritual energy, the spirit levels, and the power of the spirit energy. Thereby, this knowledge and evolution levels reaches only up to the Arahat Athrasada. Anyway, I thought it was very interesting, the information about Arahat Athrasada. It's something I don't know that much about. Also, the spirit form of Nokadamian, I'd like to learn more about. I don't know as much about it as I would like to. Let me read a little bit where Billy talks about Nokadamian and Henoch's descendants. Billy says, yes, whereby, however, quite a few will not act according to their determination and will therefore not observe their obligation. A long chain of Nokadamians and Henoch's descendants, respectively sons, is arranged under this obligation. Now, again, Sphath, Semyase, Ptah, Quetzal are all related to this Nokadamian lineage. And that's one of the reasons that they still have contacts with Edward Albert Meyer. Ask it, I'm not sure of. But I wouldn't doubt if that was the case, if he did, or if she did, in fact, have some genetic relationship to the people in the Nokadamian spirit form, in that line, in that descendant. It's a family relationship there. Let me continue here just a little bit. And now when the Nokadamian spirit form, in spite of its high development, lives in a human whose consciousness is even higher developed than that of the fellow humans generally in respect of the knowledge of the Spirit, then this is also only possible through certain altered measures that were made possible through the Patali level. Anyway, even getting that spirit form out of the highest spiritual plane was very, very difficult to do. And that was something that was done specifically for, quote unquote, the mission. And the mission is bigger than the Earth, because there were other planets and other star systems for the past 9.6 billion years that this spirit form has taught on. Taught in, I should say. So the spirit form of Edward Albert Meyer is very, very ancient. As I've said before, he's been Enoch on the earth. The people that we call Enoch, Elijah, Isaiah, Jeremiah, Emmanuel, and Muhammad. And in each one of these lifetimes, he taught the teaching of the spirit, which deals with the human spirit, which is what we've been talking about, which is called the Geistform in the German. The human spirit, it resides in the superior colliculus, the center of the midbrain. It controls our sight. It gives body to our life to the whole body. It comes into the child at 21 days. It enlivens the whole body. And it's at that point that the fetus becomes a human being that has evolution of its consciousness. And that's the point of the reason for all of the many incarnations of a spirit form. And your spirit form, if you're an average Earth human, has between 4 and 5 million years of existence behind it. And you could probably say you've spent half that time in the material and half that time in the spiritual realms. Now, that's really interesting if you think about it, because that means that you probably incarnated in ancient, ancient times about 2.5 million years ago. And that's when we were first really becoming Homo sapiens. So that's how old your spirit form is. You know, you go way back to caveman times. At least your spirit form has done that. And you've probably reincarnated every 50 to 70 years and had lifetimes and made lots of mistakes. And your spirit form has learned from those mistakes. And here you are again in a material lifetime. And finally, now we're starting to get information on the earth that starts to make sense about what life is all about. Can you imagine the difficulty in your earlier incarnations, when you didn't have any information to connect the dots and you still had to try to strive to survive? Remember, one of the creational natural laws that we live by is striving. And the harder you strive, the more happiness you will have. And what it says here, and this is on page 100 of The Way to Live, it says, in striving for that which is higher, for evolution, for the highest possible, absolutely full development, as in the case with creation itself, every single wizen of any kind, from its very first breath to its very last, also strives for that which is higher, for evolution and completion. A wizen in the German is not only human beings, but the higher mammals, cats, dogs, horses, dolphins, chimpanzees, they also strive for higher evolution. All of nature is under the creational natural law of striving. Now, we as human beings, we can evolve our consciousness. So we have another kind of striving that the other animals don't have, but they do evolve their intelligence. And evidently, there is a difference between truly evolving your consciousness and just evolving your intelligence. Let me continue with what it says here. Every moment in the existence of a vision is just as much directed as striving as the entire being of creation itself. Remember, the purpose of creation is evolution. Creation, the universal consciousness, I think we've really, through religion, it's been called Heavenly Father. And I don't think that's a good thing at all, because creation is it's neutral positive. It's much more neutral than Heavenly Father. Let me give some examples. When the earthquake comes, when the volcano erupts and thousands of people are killed, people say that God works in mysterious ways. Well, maybe, it's just maybe, that the universal consciousness is neutral. It's neutral positive. So when it creates spirit forms, it does so knowing that the law of cause and effect exists. So there's things that happen that have causes that are going to adversely affect parts of creation. And there, in other words, creation is not giving commands. It's not a Heavenly Father. It radiates love, but not personal love. It radiates an energy, just like the sun radiates energy, radiates light and heat. Let me continue here. Every moment in the existence of a vision is as much directed as striving as is the entire being of creation itself. Creation itself, as well as all its creatures, are vision heightened. They're imbued with the power of striving. In order to attain success, the future progress, and that which is higher. So we are imbued with the power of striving. That should give you a sense of optimism. Creation has given us the power of striving. And if you learn to utilize your power, you will enjoy striving. Striving is the power of the spiritual as well as the physical. So you're striving spiritually as well as you're striving physically. And striving is an incontrovertible creational law. We can see that in nature very easily. One of the strange things that's going on right now in my neck of the woods is something they call the 17-year cicadas, which you would not believe. There are millions and millions of these bugs, and they're fairly large, that come up out of the ground and that are constantly making this noise, flying around. It sounds like there is a 8 or 10 Plarion ships over my house all the time. This is part of creation. This is part of striving. This is part of nature. In order to reach, let me continue with striving here. In order to reach through incessant evolution, that which is higher and absolutely fully developed. The greatest power in every single vision is there to serve the striving. So all of your inner power is focused on this striving to push you forward, to evolve your consciousness. All of you can see how important it is to take and use every minute of your time and to focus it on that which is most important to your striving. So what that means is you will start to eliminate that which is useless or nonsensical of your time. And if all of the if we here in the human race on Earth would just properly orient ourselves to the principle of striving, it would help so much. Because much of the nonsense that goes on in the earth is because people are neglecting their striving, because they're involved in idleness and other things, they get involved in things which are really wasting their time. Let me continue here. And every single wizen is there to serve the striving. All of our power is to serve the striving. And truthfully, striving is this great and enormous power itself. Striving is the law of evolution. Refers to that which is most ancient. And all of creation is working towards striving. Striving is the law of evolution and of all absolutely full development. And striving is the power of the life. It's a sense of progress. When you are striving, you'll have a sense of progress. If striving is absent in some life form, then the power of progress will start to extinguish in their life. And that's when depression comes in. That's when addictions come in. All sorts of things happen when a person stops their striving. The sense of life literally starts to go away. If a human being loses his striving, they will also lose their sense of life. That's where the clinical depression kicks in. If the human being can no longer strive for anything at all, or if he feels that way, he will start to get the idea he's not useful for anything. And it becomes very difficult then. And striving is the nature of humanity. It's the nature of the human being. And if this nature is nullified for whatever reasons, that's when unhappiness comes in. That's when the circumstances of life go bad. That's when the bad feelings start to come in. If you're struggling with some issue right now, strive. Get to work on something. Get to work on something. If it's cleaning out your garage, get to work on something. Use this time to focus on something important. Use your inner power for striving. That will bring you out of the mess that you're in right now, whatever that mess may be. Striving is the actual nature of the human being. However, if this nature is nullified, then you'll start to feel like you don't have any place in the world. If the striving breaks down, people can become displeased with life. They can become suicidal. In fact, if we all stopped striving, society would collapse. So the entire world would collapse if we would stop striving. That's how big this creational natural law is. In fact, if creation were to end its striving, then even it would vanish without a trace. There would be no being at that point. Without striving, there is no life. Without life, there is no striving. So there's the meaning of life. If you wanted to find out from the Meyer material the meaning of life, if you put it in real simple, plain terms, striving, the creational natural law of striving, which leads to the evolution of the consciousness and all the other things. Without life and striving, no evolution, no being. Nothing would exist because everything would have vanished into nothingness without ever finding the possibility of striving and thereby of the life. All being is striving, and all striving is being. I wish I had my highlighter handy. That's worth highlighting. You should see this page. I have like 70% of it highlighted. All being is striving, and all striving is being. That which comes forth from the striving, and this is what you will get from striving, truth, knowledge, wisdom, love, peace, harmony, progress, and the last, and certainly not the least, happiness. All of that comes from striving. But also from the striving comes the consciousness. In the incessant sense of progress, right up to the being in highly, absolutely full development. Striving creates the life right up to the being. So this is one of the creational natural laws. Striving. It's absolutely critical to focus on that. And you can apply that to your life every single day. It is the basis for your happiness. Now, along with striving, the other creational natural law deals with perceptions, thinking, recognition. And that's the law of harmony. And the book, The Might of Thoughts, is all about maintaining this harmony internally in the psyche, in the material consciousness. You know, you continually have harmony within your gemut, which is your spiritual consciousness. The gemut controls the thoughts and the feelings associated with the spiritual consciousness. The spiritual consciousness can never be harmed by anything in the material world. It will always be happy. It will always be neutral positive. It will never, it's completely invulnerable. Your spiritual consciousness is like Superman. It cannot be harmed. Your material consciousness can break down completely. It can be harmed. If you stop striving, your psyche can be destroyed. It can lead to suicide. Your spiritual consciousness will not have one iota of sadness. It can never have sadness. Let me continue here. Let me read here. Consequently, it is not able to create any conscious, evolutive, and creative thoughts. Now, this is talking about the thoughts of most animals. Nevertheless, however, animals also have feelings. Your animals do have feelings. Your pets, your dogs, and your cats, which are a kind of instinct consciousness and drive-based consciousness. But in animals, they do not have the creative conscious. They don't have the fundamental processing mechanisms of the human species. So we are custodians of the creation. We are to take care of these animals and these plants. They do not have the same evolutive value in their consciousness. They do not have the same consciousness ability that we do. Let me continue here. As already explained, all processes and so forth related to emotions, feelings, and to the psyche and the consciousness are cognitively conditioned factors in which the conscious or unconscious form. Let me continue. Perceptions, thinking, and recognition, factors through which the cognition is indeed embodied, do not only come into operation consciously, but also unconsciously. And I think that's what happens a lot of times during dreaming. It's your subconscious trying to talk to you, your unconscious trying to talk to you. Sometimes we're driven to do things by unconscious knowledge that we don't even know we have. We're impulsed, we're kind of driven to do these things. Okay, let me continue. A fact which is completely unknown by today's psychiatry. Psychiatry today doesn't understand that we are driven by these unconscious and subconscious things very, very much. We have a great deal of professional arrogance in the realm of psychiatry. Since cognitive processing also happens unconsciously, that means, wow, there's a whole thought process going on unconsciously. Therefore, unconscious causal conditions for emotions, thoughts, and feelings, which also often appear subliminally. These emotions, thoughts, and feelings occur, and we're not even aware of them. You ever find yourself just get really angry, and you're like, wow, where did that come from? Well, there are subconscious and unconscious things going on there. However, can nonetheless positively or negatively influence the psyche. So these unconscious forces that are going on, they are affecting your material consciousness, not your spiritual consciousness, but your material consciousness, especially in subliminal or completely unconscious forms. Manifold cognitive causal conditions can emerge, which are above all to do with the constitution of the particular human organism as well as existing living conditions in the state of evolution. In regard to this, the following factors in particular are thereby to be named, which along with many others play a decisive role in regard to unconscious cognition. Unconscious cognition, unconscious perception, and unconscious cognitive processing. Now listen to these things which can affect your unconscious cognitive processing. Remember, there's a whole unconscious cognitive processing that's going on. Alcoholism can affect your unconscious processing. Your desires can affect your unconscious processing. Drugs can. Your abilities can. Your gender, your state of health, instincts, the fitness of your body, your psyche and your consciousness. What vices you have affect your unconscious cognitions. The medicines you're using affect your unconscious cognitions. Your motivation, your satiation, sexuality, your destiny, your social influences, your addictions, and so forth, and on and on and on. Now, these are things which have important significance in regard to unconscious cognitive processing. So there's this great function of thought which we're not even aware of. It's completely unconscious. And I think that causes problems at times. We have to be very aware, just be in your conscious mind, be aware that there are unconscious things which can trigger you. These are different states which can also correspondingly trigger unconscious cognitive perceptions and negative thoughts and feelings. So these negative thoughts and feelings can come, these negative emotions can come from the unconscious. Therefore, in each case, the particular unconscious state very strongly determines the emergence and the kind and whys as well as the intensity. These powerful things that come up from our unconscious can have a great intensity, and feelings can come from these unconscious thoughts. And these, I think that also the unconscious can start to affect the conscious as well. And they can influence the psyche both in a negative and positive way. Wow, we've gone all over tonight and gone a lot deeper into some subjects than I really have in quite some time. I hope you've enjoyed this. I hope you have a great week coming up. You've been listening to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder. Have a great day.